Hello, and welcome to the first and only episode of Life at Low Latitudes. Today we will be discussing a stubby-legged fluffball who will disembowel their tormentors. I am, of course, talking about the muskox. As the Arctic's largest herbivore, muskoxen must be well-adapted animals to survive the extreme conditions they experience living at low latitudes. These creatures encounter temperatures below negative 40 degrees Celsius, which also happens to be negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit, as well as heavy winds and blizzards. So how do they survive this? If you're familiar with muskoxen, you might have noticed they look a little goofy, with a roundish body and short legs. This helps them minimize their surface area, which reduces heat loss. Their coat is two-layered, made up of a dense, fine underwool and a layer of very long guard hairs, offering the muskox superb insulation. When they lay down with their short legs folded under their guard hairs, their coat acts as a blanket, trapping heat inside. From a physiological standpoint, muskoxen have a type of hemoglobin that binds to oxygen in a reaction that releases less heat in comparison to hemoglobin found in other mammals. They also possess the ability to reduce temperature in peripheral tissues, which conserves energy without inhibiting their ability to gain oxygen. I think all of this is really cool because I have really bad circulation, so it'd be kind of nice to have a blanket during winter that I just carry around that is also socially acceptable. Anyways, living in the Arctic during the winter is no easy task. Not only do muskoxen need to keep warm, but their forage is often covered by layers of snow and ice. Muskoxen will use their front hoofs to dig craters. These are known as feeding craters, in the snow to reach the food they need to survive the season. If the snow or ice crust is too thick, they will also drop their heavy heads to break the crust in order to access the yummy snacks they need. Like many extreme environments, living in the Arctic requires muskoxen to play the game of balance. Muskox herds will reduce their movement in the winter in order to conserve energy, but this also reduces opportunities for selective foraging. In the summer, muskoxen may actively seek out nutrient-rich forbs and shrubs, not just the graminoids that make up their diet year-round. Females in particular might need to do this to satisfy energy requirements associated with reproduction. With the growing season in summer being short and forage opportunities in winter being scarce, muskoxen must be hardy bulk feeders when food is available. Large molliform teeth and a broad muzzle allow them to chew large amounts of low-quality graminoids. The muskox's large rumen requires large amounts of feeding to fill it, but it prolongs retention time, leading to more energy extraction from these low-quality forages, even compared to other ruminants. During the summer, the muskoxen obtain large energy reserves, mainly in the form of adipose tissue. This helps them survive throughout the year. Lactation for females comes at a high cost throughout the year, but especially during times when forage availability is low. During the summer, it is extremely important for cows to forage extensively and selectively to build up fat and protein gain. Though they are sexually mature before 3 years of age, females rarely breed before they are 3 years old, likely because they have not had enough time to build up suitable fat reserves for the costs associated with birth. This need to build up reserves is reflected in that cows often only breed every other year, even though they can breed back-to-back years. When calves are born, they are able to withstand temperatures as low as negative 30 degrees Celsius, which is negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit, as they are born with an underwool layer and large amounts of adipose tissue. However, they only have a short layer of guard hairs, so when low temperatures are combined with wind, they often rely on their mothers blocking the wind due to their reduced coat. Muskox groups consistently range from 5 to 44 individuals, suggesting that there is a range of optimal group size, most likely balancing predation pressure, group foraging, and reproductive behavior. Group dynamics is important for predator defense, but since group size changes seasonally and predation doesn't drastically change seasonally, it seems that foraging and reproductive aspects are also benefited from group behavior. After a perceived threat, cows, calves, and juveniles will often run to a mature bull to form an arcing line. The muskoxen then present a frontal mode of defense when they can utilize their horns as weapons. Adult muskoxen will be in the front of the formation, with yearlings and calves placed behind the line or in the center of the circle. Then the muskoxen will jostle each other and rub their preorbital glands, which is a gland located near the eye, and they rub it against their forelimb. Small groups or a lone muskox may even incorporate rocks or other large objects into their defensive formation. Many ungulates flee from predators and have developed long limbs for this cursorial locomotion. However, as I previously mentioned, muskoxen have short legs that allow them better heat conservation. I do not know the directionality of the correlation, but it would make sense if the muskox were able to evolve shorter legs for heat conservation due to not running as much from predators, or evolved group defense mechanisms as a result of having the short legs that allow them to minimize heat loss so well. However, I haven't found any papers that support this, but it makes sense in my head. Muskox group defense behavior is very effective against wolf predation, and most muskoxen killed by wolves are lone males or individuals who have been separated from the group. And the effectiveness of this group defense behavior, where the muskox are not just gaining safety in numbers, but actively defending as a group, is very unique among ungulates. Muskoxen are very visual animals, and when they rub their postorbital glands, it is not just an olfactory cue, but a visual cue as well. The muskoxen take a step forward when they rub these glands with their forelimbs, which can be perceived as a threat display when their large dark head lowers to cover the view of their white legs. Now, there's a video out there of a muskoxen absolutely destroying a pumpkin with its horns, and, well, it's quite brutal to watch. During the mating season, male muskoxen do not defend a specific territory, but rather take possession of an existing group of muskoxen. If a harem already has a dominant male, then a new male must battle it out with that muskox if they want to take possession of the harem. Mortality is actually quite high, with an estimated 10% of male muskoxen dying from these dominance battles. These battles include swiping each other with their horns, running and clashing their horns together, as well as dominance displays such as roaring. Now, I didn't know muskoxen can roar, but it sounds like this. Apparently, the larger the body, the deeper the roar. Also, the dominant male does not have the power to form the harem himself, but rather takes advantage of the natural aggregation tendencies of muskoxen in general. He merely defends his harem from other males. Studies show that if the dominant male tries to lead the group in any particular direction, well, to put it simply, he's largely ignored, and the herd follows a mature cow instead, who isn't full of raging testosterone. Since muskox males disproportionately influence the gene pool, and given their predator defense style, it makes sense to me that their mating system selects for aggressive and large males. Now, muskoxen must be smelly, right? They have to get their name from somewhere. It likely comes from the rutting odor exuded by the dominant harem male, which doesn't come from a metabolic change, but rather the urine he sprinkles on his own skirt. This olfactory cue might seem unpleasant, but it could convey a lot of useful information, such as identity to prevent dominance fights that have already occurred, or merely that there is a harem male present to scare interlopers away. Now, shifts in global climate are putting many species at risk, so let's talk about the threats facing muskoxen. Though muskoxen were extirpated from regions throughout their range, and their numbers greatly reduced, they were never listed as endangered or threatened, likely because when this decimation of muskox numbers occurred, it was before species of concern were being listed in legislation. The muskoxen survived major climate change at the end of the Pleistocene, and seem to endure smaller hunting pressures as well. When European hunting pressure descended on them, however, their numbers were greatly reduced. Once hunting was prohibited, muskox numbers grew to steady numbers again, with herds being reintroduced into previous areas of their range, such as Alaska. They are now listed as least concerned on the IUCN Red List. Most muskox populations are relatively stable currently, but what specific climatic shifts will occur in the Arctic are largely unknown. Warmer winters tend to be snowier, and heavy snowpack, as well as factors like freezing rain, can greatly prohibit the muskoxen's foraging capabilities. Of course, winter is not a good time to lose the minimal forage that muskoxen have. Seasons following winters with higher than average snow have already seen muskox populations with low calf recruitment, which could cause population numbers to become unstable. And even short weather events can have dramatic effects on ungulate populations. Shifting vegetation communities is often seen as a concern associated with climate change, but as muskoxen are large generalist foragers, I would personally say that deeper snowpack during winter would be of higher concern. But of course, if new vegetative communities were unsuitable resources for the muskoxen, or they did not meet energetic requirements that muskox need to build up during the growing season, this could be a really big issue. Another prominent concern faced by current and future muskox is disease. One of the common disadvantages to living in a herd is the increased risk of disease, and muskoxen are no exception. Diseases like eczema, I don't know if I said that right, can greatly reduce herd numbers, and we have already seen some diseases become more prevalent as a consequence of climate change. Muskoxen have endured many genetic bottleneck events, meaning they may not have as much resistance to certain diseases, especially new ones that may arise because of melting permafrost or something like that, and increased prevalence of diseases and biting insects as a consequence of warming weather is definitely a concern. However, serious study of muskox disease is just beginning to take place, so little is known about how climate change will affect the risk of disease. Lastly, I want to talk about caribou. In many areas, muskoxen have recovered quite well and are thought to have caused declines in local caribou populations. Studies suggest that muskoxen are able to outcompete caribou, though muskoxen are often generalist grazers and caribou are more selective. And in many places that have seen an increase in muskox numbers, have also observed a decrease in caribou numbers. Locals tend to value caribou more, so there's much debate about how many muskoxen should be hunted each season. Hunting limits vary depending on the region. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, this will be the only podcast of Life at Low Latitudes. After careful consideration, we don't think that it could possibly get better than the muskox, cute snow stompers that they are.